Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Quite a bit to talk about this week. We're going to be talking about the Forbidden Door card that, of course, happens tonight. Talk a little bit about Money in the Bank and some of the things that may come out of that. But I want to start first with SmackDown because much as we prophesized on our last show, and this happens a lot, we're usually ahead of the curve. We said Vince McMahon appears to be back in complete control of creative, and regardless of who is officially written down as head of creative, it means nothing because it has to be run by Vince McMahon, who can nix the whole thing with a snap of his fingers. And that is exactly what happened. Again, it happened Monday night on Raw, and it happened Friday night on SmackDown. Friday night on SmackDown to a much greater degree. Now, if you remember, on Monday night Raw, Seth Rollins was supposed to issue an open challenge, which was going to be answered by Tommaso Ciampa. The idea behind it would have been that Ciampa would have not lost. It would have been a no-finish type thing. I believe that it would have involved Finn Balor coming down and doing the same thing, basically. Not really sure what it was exactly going to be finished, but there was going to be no actual finish, thus promoting Tommaso Ciampa as a top guy, a guy that was very capable of beating Seth Rollins. Vince McMahon nixed that and went ahead with the Finn Balor attack, no actual open challenge, and The Miz taking on Tommaso Ciampa, which we said at the time, and I still say, is actually better. Tommaso Ciampa does not need to be elevated in one night. And if you try to elevate him in one night, the fans are going to reject that and say, oh, I see, he left just barely being able to beat so-and-so. He comes back, and all of a sudden we're supposed to be able to suspend our disbelief and think he can beat Seth Rollins or almost beat Seth Rollins. I never liked that kind of booking. I would much prefer a slow build of Tommaso Ciampa. If you want to put him up in a big spot, let's do that. So I said at the time, I think Vince McMahon's call was a good one. But let's move over to SmackDown. Because, wow, first off, Bayley was supposed to take on Shotzi, which she thought she was doing literally hours before the actual event because she tweeted about it. She literally tweeted and said, I've been too nice for too long, and I'm taking out the garbage or whatever it happens to be. A little bit later, she's tweeting out, well, the card's subject to change. I'm sorry that you won't be able to see me kick ass, okay? They took that match completely away. Completely gone. But that's not the only match that was completely gone. We were supposed to see Baron Corbin's match. Cameron Grimes. Completely gone. Completely gone. There's two matches that were totally removed from SmackDown. And then we get a change of a matchup in which we were supposed to see a three-way, which was going to feature Butch, LA Knight, and I believe Santos Escobar. And that was totally taken away. And it was instead Rey Mysterio versus LA Knight. SmackDown was totally rewritten. And from what I hear, it was totally rewritten at the behest of Vince McMahon, who did this. So at this stage of the game, much like we said on Tuesday's show, Vince McMahon is theoretically the head of creative. He may not be coming up with the ideas, but what's the difference? If you go to him and say, we want to do X, Y, and Z, and he says, yeah, that's not happening. Instead, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Who's the head of creative? Who's really the head? Now, we're going to talk a little bit about how this particular SmackDown, which I thought was a good SmackDown, either gained or suffered from Vince McMahon's decisions. LA Knight getting a solo victory over Rey Mysterio is big. It's important. Now, he may have been getting that same victory over Butch and Santos Escobar. I do not know. But I still think it's a little bit bigger to go over on Rey Mysterio, which, if fans are a big supporter of LA Knight, should probably like, because that means that Vince McMahon's on board. He could have easily said, well, Rey Mysterio's going over. I don't like LA Knight. He didn't do that. So he must be on board with LA Knight, so that's a good thing. Here's the problem. How do you throw Bayley to the Wolves, and basically you throw Cameron Grimes, who just showed up, to the Wolves? You had a big hadoo with both of them last week. And you advertised these matches. You sold tickets on some of these matches, by the way. So changing them, I'm seeing the code for the what the hell is that? I understand this card's subject to change. However, when you buy a ticket and it's literally changed, not because someone's sick, someone's injured, someone missed their flight, those things happen. When it's changed because, yeah, I just don't like it. Well, did you like it last week when it was announced? Because that was the time to change it so that fans had time to realize those things aren't happening before I buy my tickets. So I'm a little annoyed when they do that for no reason, Mike. What's your thoughts?
I'm a little bit annoyed when they do that for no reason as well, because that smacks of what they would do, you know, before, you know. Even before Vince was obviously back as basically the leader, the creator, creative, you know, it's like you're writing a show and you're writing it on the fly. Now, is it Vince's goal to make it feel that way? I don't know, but again, we should have got. I would have loved to have gotten Cameron Grimes thing. Bayley is Bayley and whatever. But the one that I really wanted was the Cameron Grimes Baron Corbin match, because we knew where the thing with Baron Corbin is headed, and that would have been the next step in the thing after what happened on Tuesday night when he went into and said what he said at NXT. Right? That's the next. That match is the next step in the process of bringing back the Lone Wolf, and we don't get – now, right. Can we get that – will we get that match at some point? Maybe. But, again, if you've got X, Y, and Z plan and somebody comes and says, no, we're doing A, B, and C, what can you do, you know?
There's not a lot you can do. Again, were these super important matches? Probably not. But at the same time, you know, you did advertise them, and the guys were there. It's not like anybody missed their flight or was sick or injured or anything, so it's weird. It's a little bit weird. Anyway, like I said, the good news, if you're an LA Knight fan, is that Vince McMahon could have nixed that whole entire thing. And LA Knight getting a win over Santos Escobar or LA Knight getting a win over Butch is not the same thing as LA Knight getting a win over Rey Mysterio. Getting a win over Rey Mysterio is much, much bigger. So if anything, Vince McMahon actually elevated LA Knight's status rather than, you know, just reduced it. He could have said, no, you're losing, right? The interesting thing is, despite his popularity, it seems like they are insistent upon keeping him a heel. He is only facing faces. It's weird. You would think that given this, I'm sure that after Money in the Bank, they want Money in the Bank, I think, to go to a heel. It's kind of a heel gimmick. Yes, faces had it in the past, but faces who have it in the past are boring. Remember when John Cena came out and literally told CM Punk, next week I'm cashing in, I want a match with you? You know, people don't want to see that. They want to see that, uh-oh, here they come running down, but that's a heel gimmick. So I think they want to keep LA Knight in that heel gimmick long enough to do this. If you want my personal opinion, here's what I would do. I would have LA Knight win the Money in the Bank briefcase. This is if you want to turn him face and make him big. Have LA Knight win the Money in the Bank briefcase. Attempt to cash in on Seth Rollins right away. Right away. Within the next week or two. And have Finn Balor be the person who stops him, because Finn Balor, then you've got Finn Balor, LA Knight. Then you've got LA Knight saying, okay, well, you screwed me over. The fans are going to be 100% on LA Knight's side. And then you'd see that progression. That, in other words, Finn Balor would be LA Knight's Adrian Adonis to Roddy Piper. It would be that moment where you said, okay, well, a heel made the wrong move here on LA Knight. I mean, after all, you got to have that moment. Now, you have, you know, number of people that you could put against LA Knight, but I think Seth Rollins' championship would be the one he'd want to go after, and obviously Finn Balor would be the one trying to stop that if he wants to be the champion. Prove how good LA Knight is at this, by the way. Logan Paul is a definite heel, right? Logan Paul is a definite heel. LA Knight came out and in 10 seconds shut down Logan Paul last week, right, when he said, here's a guy who thinks he's a superstar. He makes videos for 14-year-old girls. I mean, that is a bomb, you know, that's a bomb drop. Because that's 100% accurate. He can do this. LA Knight can do this. But you're going to have that problem of the fans are going to cheer him. They cheered him during the Rey Mysterio match. And everyone loves Rey Mysterio. Fans very seldom are not on Rey Mysterio's side. Very, very seldom. And in some ways, this may be what Vince McMahon had in mind. Hear me out. People say, well, Butch, you know, he's not a fan favorite exactly. Santos Escobar, he hasn't really taken off with the fans yet. So, of course, they're going to cheer LA Knight. That doesn't prove the fans really, really like him. They just like him better than them two. But if they cheer him over Rey Mysterio, who everyone likes, well, then maybe we better take a closer look at LA Knight. Maybe that was Vince McMahon's plan, Tom, because if that's the case, it worked.
Yeah, it sure did. And I'll be honest with you. I was not shocked that they were cheering LA Knight during the Rey Mysterio match. I was not shocked at all. Actually, I was kind of chuckling a little bit because here we have LA Knight basically mic dropping Logan Paul. He tried to, basically all he did was tell the truth. So, I mean, but he did such a great job, and fans were like, oh, yeah, you know, that's accurate. When it came time to Friday night, you know, that's a heel versus a heel. Clearly, both. When it came time for Friday night and Rey Mysterio, well, you figured the fans would be on Rey Mysterio's side. He's a legend. He's a veteran. LA Knight, that came out, that place came unglued. And I was like, okay, this is going to be good because you kind of don't, you know, him going over on Rey Mysterio is, him being cheered over Rey Mysterio is one thing, but going over on Rey Mysterio cleanly was another. And I think it speaks volumes to Vince McMahon being very high on LA Knight. I think he's put his confidences behind him. I wasn't sure before.
Well, let's say this though. Let me say this. I don't want to give Vince McMahon too much credit. I don't know if he was making that test. But Mike, if he was, that's the correct move. In other words, if you've got a heel and you say, I don't know, the fans are really starting to like him, but how much do they like him? Let's put him up against a guy who the fans are like iffy about. Well, that don't mean anything because they're going to cheer him then. But let's put him up against a guy who not only got the biggest ovation at WrestleMania and fans were totally on his side against Dominic, but also Hall of Famer this year. Everyone loves him. complete legend. Nobody boos Ray ever. Let's see if the crowd is at least 50-50. Because then, if they are, then we know this is real. And the crowd was definitely 50-50. So I don't know if I'm giving Vince McMahon too much credit or not, Mike, but that could have been the test.
That is the test. And look, I mean, yeah, he's probably going to get cheered against when he faces Finn Balor, but hell, really get cheered. Put him against Dominic. I know they're on different shows, but put him against Dominic, and let him drop some bombs on Dominic.
Yeah, I mean they could do that too. There, listen, you got to find the guy, but I don't want to give Vince McMahon too much credit. Perhaps I'm just overthinking this. But if his motivation for changing that match was to see if LA Knight would remain popular when he was put in the ring against someone who was always popular with the fans, then that's a stroke of genius, and that works, Todd. And we learned that, yes, they will cheer LA Knight.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. And when LA Knight wrestled Rey Mysterio Friday night, and when he said about Logan Paul, that's sort of like a little face neutral promo right there.
What they're doing is basically testing the waters. Again, I like Santos Escobar. I've seen Santos Escobar put on some great matches in NXT. But he's not gotten over with the fans yet. He's not someone that the fans are like, oh, we love him. Now, Pete Dunne's one of my favorite wrestlers. But he's not gotten over with the fans yet either, to the point where they're like, oh, he's our favorite, you know? So it would have been a no-brainer that LA Knight was going to get cheered above those other two. Rey Mysterio is a different story, and he still did it. Still did it. Fans were reluctant to boo Rey, so they were just sort of cheering LA Knight. They weren't necessarily booing Rey, which is fine. That's a good crowd, by the way. The Cajun Dome was hot most of the night, so Mike called that there usually is a good crowd there, and there was. So that one I'm going to give to Vince McMahon. I'd have rather seen LA Knight versus Rey Mysterio than LA Knight versus Pete Dunne and Santos Escobar. Because that really is the litmus test to how popular LA Knight is. And the fact that you allowed him to get the win shows me that you have some confidence in him. I think very strongly that that's the guy who's going to win Money in the Bank. Very strongly think that's what's happening. So good for him. Now, on the other hand, I don't know why you take away Baron Corbin match and Cameron Grimes. I don't know. Maybe you figured you didn't have time. I don't know. The Usos promo in the beginning ran maybe a little long. I don't know. I thought they did a good job. SmackDown itself was good. SmackDown itself was solid. I do know a lot of people were upset that, oh, there was, you know, the merging of the women's tag team titles, and they did it in the most humiliating way possible, making not one of them, but both of them simultaneously tap out. I understand for the people who like, that tag team that's not good. There's no question that that's not good. And when you use the women's tag team or NXT tag team champions to set up the return, basically, of Liv Morgan, that's not good either. And I'll tell you why that's not good. That's like saying, well, all right, we've got Brock Lesnar in the ring against Randy Orton. And he beats Randy Orton. He makes Randy Orton tap out. And then here comes Dolph Ziggler to challenge him. Well, I'm sorry. That's not good. Because we have no reason to believe that Dolph Ziggler is going to pose a bigger threat than Randy Orton would have just posed, right? Well, I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel about this. If the women's NXT tag team champions are both made to tap out, Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez are not as big a threat. They're just not. So, unfortunately, you fed the wrong team to the wolves. Now, I understand that the women's NXT tag team champions were heels, and you can't have the heels versus the heels. I get all that. I get all that. But, wow. My thought is, why did you have them switch who the tag team champions were in the NXT if you were just going to let them come up and drop to Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler? You should have just kept it with who you had, which were faces. Right? The women's NXT tag team champions were faces until they got picked in the draft. And then they lost that very next NXT, and then the current champions got picked in the draft. So if you were going to do that anyway, why didn't you just stay with the faces? And the faces could have dropped. And then it would have been, well, okay, well, that makes sense. So, yeah, I have a little problem with this, Tom, because it makes it appear to me anyway that a stronger team was fed to the Lions to promote what I think is a weaker team, even though they were the former champions.
And I get the backstory. I agree, but I get the backstory of Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez never lost the championships. I get that. But when you take a team that was pretty dominant in NXT, for tag team champions, and also very popular, and the match for them to simultaneously tap out, not to promote the return of Liv Morgan, who, by the way, was not over. The only reason she was a little bit over because she was teaming with Raquel Rodriguez, who is definitely over. Fans seem to love her. But to feed them to the wolves, to feed Alba Fire and Isla Dawn to the wolves was, you know, unfortunately, I think they're going to be relegated to, doing matches on Main Event pretty shortly, and that's sad.
Well, let's hope not. See, the thing is, Liv Morgan for a while was very over. In fact, it was the fans who literally brought her to the women's championship, right? She was as over as she could possibly be, and then she got exposed. We had said on this show, when they were giving her that title run and we knew they were going to give her the belt, we said, you're making a mistake. And everybody said to us, oh, why do you hate Liv Morgan? She's so wonderful. I said, I don't hate Liv Morgan. I like Liv Morgan very much. I think Liv Morgan is a future major, major player in the WWE, but you're rushing her. And you rush her, and then you're going to expose her weaknesses, and then the WWE is going to see and say, ah, she's not as good as we thought, forget it. And that's exactly what they did. When her weaknesses got exposed as the champion, where she wasn't too good with the promo, she had her problems in the ring here and there, they said, oh, no, this isn't going to work. The fans like her. We tried it. It doesn't work. And now they relegated to, well, you're a tag team contender. Maybe you'll be a champion, but it's very doubtful. And the whole bottom line of this is, it never would have happened if you didn't rush her, because does Liv Morgan have the ability and the potential to be a women's champion? Absolutely. And she has a lot of charisma until she opens her mouth. She's got to learn. Someone's got to take her to promo class and really give her some pointers, because she can't help the way she sounds, but she can help the way she delivers line. And unfortunately, she comes off as being like a Karen. She comes off more, annoying than the people were supposed to be. Because as soon as she opens her mouth, she's like, and you're just like, oh, God. That's not what a face is supposed to do. Just not. She needs to calm down. She needs to talk more quietly. She needs to be a little more reserved. When Liv Morgan's at her best is when she's a little bit quiet, but she looks like she's thinking very bad things, because she's good at that. She was really good at that with the Riot Squad, remember? All she really did was giggle a little bit and and look at you like, you know, she had ill intentions for you. And she was real good at that. As soon as she started cutting these heartfelt promo type things, she's not good at it. To be fair, neither is Raquel Rodriguez. And Friday night was the first time, Mike, that I looked at Sonya Deville and Ronda Rousey and said, you know, this could work. They have legit badass cred. And if you let them tear through the division for 5 months, 4 months, you may actually be able to lend some credibility to this women's division, because nobody can really look at those two and say, oh, come on, they're your champions. You know, they look like Playboy models. They don't look like fighters. No, these two women are clearly fighters, clearly. And they have the credentials to back it up. So it does add some, you know, credibility to these championship belts.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And what's her name sounds like, we know Chelsea Green is doing that whole Karen thing, right? But she doesn't sound like a Karen. She doesn't sound like, you know, she sounds like a wrestler. She can talk fast, she can talk slow, and still sound right. Whereas Liv Morgan, if she talks too fast, you get what you said you got, right? And so,
yes.
I mean, look, I like Chelsea Green, but maybe they ought to change her gimmick. You know, I know it's sort of working, but and maybe they should change her gimmick, because she's better on the mic than people think she is. You know, and as far as
Chelsea Green's doing a wonderful job, it's just that, you know, if you want to promote Liv Morgan. Again, you got to sometimes be careful what you say, because everybody takes everything the wrong way. So let me just be blunt. Liv Morgan's greatest asset is she's extraordinarily attractive. Guys are definitely into her. She knows it, the way she walks, the way she conducts herself, everything. She understands that her main audience is 20 to, you know, teenage boys, and I'm sure even older. And girls think she's cool. But here's the thing. You have to appeal to that wide audience. You have to have that moment. If you're going to be a face, you have to have that moment where people say, I really like this person. You know who was really good at that and still extraordinarily beautiful in her own right, and she was able to overcome it with her actual personality, is Alexa Bliss. When Alexa Bliss first showed up, her whole gimmick is, I'm beautiful. I'm a princess. I'm this. I'm that. Right? And then she was able to show different sides of herself. She was able to show the face side, the heel side, a different perception of her. Then she did the whole dark Alexa Bliss thing, and that worked out. And people started looking at her saying, no, she's got some chops when it comes to character acting. And she's likable in all of it. That's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with a little sex appeal if you're also likable on top of it. I mean, I would argue that probably almost 100% of 99.9% of the women in the WWE are attractive women, right? It's just that some of them are real good at character acting. Becky Lynch is a very pretty woman. But her gimmick is nothing to do with her looks. It has to do with her whole entire attitude, her persona, everything else, right? Bianca Belair is a very attractive woman, but her whole gimmick is about, you know, being a top-level athlete and being the best and whatever. I don't know what Liv Morgan's gimmick is. I'm Liv Morgan. And I know what Raquel Rodriguez's gimmick is. She's very big. She's standing next to Ronda Rousey, and it looked like, you know, AJ Styles standing next to Andre the Giant. And then, see, the thing is, Ronda Rousey has to sell. Oh, no, Liv Morgan's coming down the aisle. I'm so scared. That's not The Undertaker. I don't like when you have to do that. Oh, now we're nervous. she's back. Uh-oh, we're in real trouble. No, come on. You guys should be super confident and say, good, we busted your ass once, we'll bust your ass again. There should be no part of Ronda Rousey or Shayna Baszler who are scared at the return of Liv Morgan. Because when you sell that, that's the wrong psychology. Because then fans say, oh, that's dumb. Why would they be scared of her? See, if you didn't sell it, if you said, oh, she's back. Well, look, our favorite punching bag is back. Oh, Raquel, I'm sure you think this is going to scare the hell out of us, right? We can't wait to give you a match. Because your weak link here that's always doing all the losing for you is going to do the losing for you again. And this time maybe it should go out for a whole lot longer. That way everybody sides with Liv Morgan and says, wow, that was fucked up to say. I hope Liv Morgan teaches them a lesson, right? But no, you got to make her like, uh-oh, here comes, you know, the rebirth of China. We're all scared of her. Ronda Rousey and then Shayna Baszler scared of her. No. Just wrong. It's the wrong psychology, and that's why it doesn't work. There's only a few women you can do that with where people say, oh, shit. Raquel Rodriguez is one of them because she's so big. Charlotte Flair is one of them because she's so over as, you know, she don't lose much. And Becky Lynch is one of them because you know she's going to try to bust your ass. Even if she doesn't, she's still going to try to. Those three women, you can say, yeah, you know, you might be a little intimidated by them. At one time, Asuka, not so much now. Not Liv Morgan. You got to make Liv Morgan the underdog. You got to make Liv Morgan the one that they're joking about and saying, oh, Liv's back. You looking for another broken arm? You looking for another broken leg? That's what we specialize in, you know. I could see him being a little afraid. If it was the reverse, if Liv Morgan came out and said, I'm back, and they said, oh, well, you know, big deal, you're back. We're going to kick your ass. And then she said, oh, I got my partner here. And then out comes Raquel Rodriguez. I could see him going, oh, okay. Well, that's not good. But it wasn't. And it just doesn't fit the right psychology, in my opinion, Mike.
Right. And there's a couple of other girls that are that way. I mean, you can feel that way about Bianca Belair, you know, best athlete. Very muscular, very strong. Uh-oh, here comes Bianca, right? You know, so, yeah.
Yes, but I would say that's iffy, and I'll tell you why. Because she's not somebody you say, yeah, she's a great wrestler, and she might be able to beat me. But I don't think that's why you're scared of somebody. You're scared of somebody because you're like, oh, shit, how do you beat that person? That's Charlotte Flair.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, Raquel Rodriguez, who's so freaking strong. That's maybe even Rhea Ripley or something like that. You know, Bianca Belair, you say, okay, I know it's going to be a good fight. I know it's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy. There's mm-hmm. a difference between saying that's a serious challenger and having that look on your face as opposed to, oh, we're scared. You know,
yeah.
Like when The Rock came out, nobody was really scared. They just, okay, The Rock is coming out. That sucks because we know he's good. When you heard the dong of the bell for The Undertaker, you're like, oh, fuck. We're going to get our ass kicked. That is different. So, yeah, it's iffy. I just think that they, again, I think Liv Morgan has her place. I just think they don't know what to do with her, Mike.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah. When you heard the glass breaking,
right.
You knew Stone Cold was coming out, and you knew, yeah, he may lose the match, but somebody's going to get their ass whooped.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You know,
yes.
So and as far as the matches they cut out of the show, I mean, think about it this way. Yeah, it was bad that they cut a couple of these matches out of the show, but correct me if I'm wrong, didn't they add some time to the matches that were there?
Yes.
And let
absolutely
them develop? So,
yes.
So, in essence, it helped those matches that were still there. Yeah, you want to see the Corbin-Grimes match, but it helped the matches that were there because they gave them time.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with that. You got more time, plus you did add Sheamus versus Solo Sikoa, which is a pretty good match. pretty damn good match. And you added the good storyline of Ridge Holland getting his ass busted backstage, Sheamus coming out in front of the crowd and saying, if you want to fight, you got one. The only thing I'm a little bit concerned about with the ending of SmackDown was we had the Usos come out and literally say, we don't want to fight our family. We don't want to do it. We still love Roman. He's still the tribal chief. And, you know, we were still willing to do whatever he asked us to do, but he disrespected us. And when he disrespected us, that's when we said, okay, well, we're not doing this anymore. We're not going to be disrespected by you. So logically, their other brother, they should be trying to reach. And to come out and just kick his ass, well, I don't know, an hour and a half ago, he said he didn't want to do that. So why don't you come out and try to reason with him and have him be the guy that strikes the first blow before you guys hit him? Because if you guys hit him, it doesn't look like you are having a problem with fighting your family. It looks like you're itching to fight your family. Now, I would have loved to see Jimmy and Jay come out and say, Solo, that's enough. Come on, man. You know, ease up. This isn't what we need. And have him kind of look like, yeah, you're right, and then bam, hit one of them. And then the other one just, okay, well, if that's the way you're going to play it, and then you go from there. To have them be the ones that struck first, as far as I'm concerned, Todd, took away from the end of that match.
I mean, that's all right. Like you said, the Usos shouldn't have struck first. They should have Solo to go after them first. That way around.
Yeah, I mean, if you run out and you tell Solo, come on, stop. We're not like this. We don't need to do this. This is exactly what we're telling you about Roman. This stuff doesn't need to happen. Let Solo have that 5 seconds of kind of saying, maybe you're right. And so the fans are kind of lulled into thinking, oh, wait a minute, they're gonna kind of talk some sense into Solo. And then instead, he attacks them. Then they have justification to attack. But the way it was this way, Tom, they just got finished saying they didn't want to fight their family and then come out to defend Sheamus over their brother.
And you know what? That was we spoke about the psychology of wrestling a few days ago, and that was the wrong psychology, because if you're going to come out in the ring and cut a promo saying you don't want to fight your family and then turn around 2 hours later and do the exact opposite what you said, that's kind of confusing. So you do want to fight your family? So what was wrong with exactly what you just said? I was actually just thinking about that. What was wrong with going, hey, Solo, listen, you're our brother, and we're trying to reach you. It's enough. Enough is enough already. And have Solo kind of, you know, back down a little bit, and then as revenge for last week, hit one of them with the thumb of death, and then when the other guy goes to super kick him, hit him with the thumb, and then act like.
Or better yet, Tom, just let him go to try to hit him with it, and then when they realize he almost struck us, it would almost be like we were sort of like he didn't quite get there, like. He says, okay, you're right, or whatever. He's sort of indicating they're right. And then when he goes to use that Samoan spike, they block it. Like, we knew you were bluffing us. You're our brother. You can't lie to us. You know what I mean? Then if they super kicked him, you'd say, oh, well, whatever, man. They're not going to back down to him. Then they could always say, listen, we're going to beat tough love out of him until he realizes we're right. But just coming down and assaulting him and defending Sheamus over your own brother is weird. When you've just cut a promo saying we're brothers and we learned, it's just weird. It doesn't make a ton of sense, Mike, and I wish they'd done it the other way.
I wish they would have done it the other way, but what also came out of this match is they found another good matchup for Sheamus. I mean, look, we've talked about Gunther. We've talked about Drew McIntyre. And you cannot, if you're that type of wrestler like Solo is, you're going to have a good match with Sheamus. And that was a really good match.
Yes,
I mean,
it was.
Let's put out the ending, right? The match in and of itself was a great match. And they met. They work well together, just like Drew and just like Gunther does with him. or yeah.
Yeah, anybody with sort of a Smash Mouth style of wrestling works really good with Sheamus. Now, one of those things that I thought was particularly great in the match that I think gets overlooked, and again, our audience, I hope our audience likes when we do this and we really do a deep dive into the psychology of stuff, because that's what I like the most about wrestling. I hope that you guys do too. So when we pick apart matches, we'll tell you specific areas where we think this was great or this was horrible. What was great in this match is when Sheamus first went for the 10 beats of the Barry, he didn't get it. Solo fought him off. And clearly, the psychology was Solo knows that shit hurts. And that I do not want to get trapped in that. He undersold some of Sheamus' other moves. A couple clotheslines he sold pretty well, but some of the other things he just go down and then kind of roll back up, do a shoulder roll and get back up, like, it hurt for a second, but that one he seemed to be afraid of. So then when Sheamus finally did catch him, the crowd went nuts. And then Solo sold that a lot. And I said, see, now that's the right psychology. He undersold a few things, like, well, I'm tough enough to absorb that. I'm tough enough to absorb that. Sheamus has a mean clothesline, but it may knock me down hard, but I'll get up quick. But when he hit him with that, then he stayed down for a bit. And that really sold that. That's great psychology. Great psychology. Sheamus, listen, you're going to miss Sheamus when he's gone. People ask me all the time, you know, underrated wrestlers, and there's a number of them. But Sheamus is right at one of the tops of the list. And some people will say he's not that underrated. We know he's good, but I don't think you know how good. Sheamus is actually one of the best in the WWE when it comes to just putting on a hard-nosed, smash-mouth, brawling wrestling match. And it's fun to watch. He's fun to watch with Gunther. He's fun to watch with Drew McIntyre. He was fun to watch with Solo Sikoa. He's fun to watch. Because everything he does looks like it really hurts. And everything he does looks like it's designed to hurt you and wear you down. There's none of this, oh, come on, that's just showboating, that wouldn't hurt. Everything with him is like a real fight. And you get that feel like they're fighting. So, yeah, I think they're going to miss him when he retires. Sheamus is very good at those type of matches.
Sheamus versus Solo was gold to me because, let me tell you what, it looked like, and maybe I'm the only one that saw this, but it looked like Solo was having a time of his life in there. The fans, when he caught him with the 10 beats, the fans kind of like started counting in advance. But
right.
It looked like Solo kind of cracked a smile a little bit, because that's kind of funny, because he just like started hitting them, and you get 1-2 and the fans are up to 4, and so it was fun to finally catch him. I actually came out of my seat when he finally caught him. I was like, yes, finally, because that does really look like it hurts. He's it looks like he's wailing on you. And he probably is, but to the fans in attendance, when that finally hit, it didn't happen the first time, but when it happened the second time, they were very excited. And you can't, not everybody has that ability. And Sheamus is one of those guys that is, he lives up to that fight night, gimmick, and he's very good at it. So kudos to.
And he has a lot of natural charisma. I don't remember who it was. I think it might have been Dolph Ziggler who said that move, that 10 beats, something had something to do with his heart, that he said, I actually, like, it gave me heart palpitation or something. So I'm surprised they still let him do it. He might ease up a little bit now, but I think it was Dolph Ziggler who said that he had some kind of a reaction from that was not good, taking that from Sheamus, who looks like he's pounding you, Todd.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, we all know for years Sheamus wrestled stiff.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, I don't have a problem with wrestling stiff, because Sheamus will take it as good as he gives it. So if you want to wrestle stiff, the only problem I ever had with anybody who wrestles stiff is if they don't want to take it. You want to dish it out, but you don't want to take it. That's a problem. But if you want to take it, then fine, dish it out, and let's go from there, and we'll have a really good stiff match. Sheamus enjoys the physicality of wrestling, where a lot of other people just enjoy the, acrobatics and the intricacies. He enjoys that physicality, and you can see he enjoys it, Mike, and it makes the crowd enjoy it.
Yeah, and absolutely. And here's another reason why we're going to miss Sheamus. Okay, at one point in the match, Solo had been working on his back, right? And there are a couple of moves that he does that he has to use his back muscles and stuff to do the white noise, and I believe he calls it the Celtic Cross, which is basically the outsider's edge, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know. Razor's Edge or something like that. So, but when he didn't try to do it until after the point at which Solo had been working on his back, and he sold the fact that Solo had been working on his back because he couldn't really do the moves.
Yeah, Mike, it's a good thing you brought that up because a lot of people said, did Sheamus literally was he not in the right position for Solo, and that's why he couldn't do it? No, I think he was just selling that my back isn't letting me do it. And do you know how much harder that is than just do it? See, that's the thing. If he just did it and put him up for the white noise, whatever, no big deal, nobody cares. And they'd say, okay, well, Sheamus is strong, he got him up in the white noise. To get him halfway up and then stop for a second and then have to struggle and do it slowly and muscle him up, that's way harder. Tony Solo can't help you. He's already jumped. So now you've got him on your back. He's not helping you anymore. And to do that, just to sell, my back is giving me a problem, and it's going to take all of my strength to do this. That's what I'm talking about, Tom, when I say good psychology.
Agreed. Psychology is very important. And, again, you could have charisma. You could have ability. But psychology of a wrestling match is, I think, kind of overtakes that in a way, because if you're not going to aid the fans in suspending their disbelief, then you don't. You're not going to get their. You're not going to get their attention. And to get their attention with the psychology, charisma and ability is great, but it's very rare that somebody has all three.
I agree with that. And listen, it's all in the perspective of what's going to draw and what's going to make the fans happy. I know this. If I were going to a WWE event, the three names that if they were on the card, I'd be like, well, I'm there, would be AJ Styles, the Usos, and Sheamus. If those three people were there fighting, I already know it's going to be good. I already know I'm going to have a good time, because I already know that those people I mentioned know exactly how to make the fans have a good time. They already know. So it's almost a guarantee. It doesn't even really matter who they fight. It's going to be pretty good. And that's probably about the best thing you can hope for, Todd.
I'm absolutely, like you said, it's, I would love to see that too. Go see those three big names to wrestle.
If you had a card with those three people on it, Mike, you're almost guaranteed to have a good time.
Absolutely. I mean, there are probably 10 groups or people in the WWE that you can say that about. I mean, you just named three of them. I put Becky Lynch in that thing, and probably Seth Rollins as well. If you know that those two, other two people on the card, you're gonna have a good time. It's a given, right? I mean, these people have been doing it for so long. I mean, now when the Usos first showed up with Tamina, you didn't know It took a while for you to figure that out, but you didn't know when they first showed up, right? That they were going to be
it's
just
true,
good.
But I'll tell you, Mike, we should pat ourselves on the back because for a long time we were saying when people – and you remember that we had some people saying, oh, come on. When we were saying the Usos might be the best tag team in the world, long before any Bloodline storyline, when they were just going at it with New Day and some other people, and we were saying, I don't know, man. I'm not seeing a bad Usos match in a very long time. These guys are really sharp. People were saying, oh, they're overrated. Well, who was right, Mike?
Yeah, look, when in that 5-year or 6-year period when the New Day were just not, they could do no wrong, right? The New Day.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, again, we knew ahead of time the Usos had that magic. And you're right, there are other people, but those are the people who come to my mind as the ones that I would say if they're on the card, I'm definitely going to have a good time. The Grayson Waller effect, let me say this. I don't like it. I like Grayson Waller a lot in NXT. I thought he had the mouth to really be annoying and to really get heat. But this is not what he's doing in the WWE. He's just being dumb. And this ticker tape thing of people saying, I love Grayson Waller, this is so dumb because, you know, it's completely fake. Completely 100% phony. Now, as far as Pretty Deadly are concerned, this was their best performance on the microphone. They got over pretty well, I think. They got a ways to go yet to get over the right way, but they're heading in the right direction. I don't think Waller is. See, Waller to me was getting over when he was that guy who was cocky, arrogant, really good on the mic, but also a major threat in the ring. Where you say, that guy's no joke. He can get this done. Just being this, I don't know why he's got SpongeBob SquarePants' fonts for everything either. Have you noticed that? All the fonts that he uses for the Waller effect come straight from SpongeBob SquarePants. I have no idea why that's the case. And he's just coming across as, I don't know, just dumb. It's not working at all. You need to change Grayson Waller immediately because you're wasting him in this. You're wasting him as some kind of a talk show host. He's not that. He's great on the mic running down his opponent. He's not good just being a second-rate Miz, and that's exactly what he's trying to be, is a second-rate Miz. So, yeah, I'm not too into this Waller thing, Tom.
No, I'm not either. And the WWE kind of just ruined him by relegating him to a talk show host. He's annoying. He's still got that annoying factor. But this man put on the match of the pay-per-view of the one before WrestleMania this year versus Johnny Gargano. That was an unbelievable match. And to go from that to the Grayson Waller effect, my goodness, you might as well just put him in a toilet and flush it. Now, Pretty Deadly, I was not high on them for when they first came in. They were annoying. And is kind of like the Fashion Police 2.0, but not as fun. But this past Friday's promo was they were really good. It was the best they've done since they've been there, since they've come up. And I'm kind of interested now to see the tag team match. I know they're not going to win.
Right.
But maybe there's that slight chance that
especially
they
since
will,
they're in England,
because
yeah, slight chance. You know what they remind me of? I'm going to make a very dated reference. If you've listened to the show on a regular basis, you know very well that I'm a big fan of old television, old movies, old whatever, long before my time even. I'd love to go back in history and watch old stuff and old cartoons. And I got to tell you that Pretty Deadly, Mike, I don't know if you've ever heard of them. Pretty Deadly reminds me of a cartoon named Heckle and Jekyll, where there was two crows, and they would just banter back and forth about after you, sir. No, after you. You look very wonderful today. Well, not as wonderful as you. They sort of remind me. They give me Heckle and Jekyll vibes.
Yeah, and they wrestle like the Rockers, the Rock and Roll Express, you know, those type of guys. They're small. Of course, they're smaller guys, and you can tell they're smaller guys. But even looking at Grayson Waller, he's a little bit bigger than they are. And that's what Waller is. I'd rather see you give that spot to L.A. Knight than Grayson Waller, because he could carry it off, you know, the Namer of Dummies and all that stuff. I know they don't want to do the Namer of Dummies, but that type of thing I think would be good for L.A. Knight when they eventually do turn him face, you know?
I think so, too, and I'll tell you, I mean, you know, you could put Grayson Waller against L.A. Knight, and that would be a hell of a lot of fun. Boy, the promos they could have. Todd, do you remember Heckle and Jekyll?
I sort of used to watch that cartoon on the cartoon of Boomerang. Of it.
You still see it once in a while, right? Right. That's who they remind me of. They're fun. Listen, they could be good. We're just going to have to wait and see what the WWE does with them. I don't see them as tag team champions. No, I don't. But I think they could be, you know, contenders. You can have a lot of fun with them. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. Aside from that, folks, well, I think SmackDown was quite good. Okay, Vince McMahon did take away a couple of matches, change one of them. But at the end of the day, we got some longer matches, like Mike pointed out. I mean, if you're going to tell me we have to take away Bayley versus Shotzi so we can give six more minutes, to Sheamus versus Solo, where do I sign? I'm sorry. It's nothing against Bayley, but, you know, that's what the crowd's paying to see. And Corbin and Cameron Grimes can be done another time. It's not integral. It was advertised, which I don't like. I don't like it when you advertise it and don't do it. That I do not like. If you're going to change it, please try to change it so that you've got ample time for fans to say, oh, okay, well, then I'm, you know, not as excited and I don't think I'll attend. Because once you get there, I mean, that would be the equivalent of me holding an autograph signing session and saying, I have Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt. And then when you get there, say, well, the card's subject to change and I have Tozawa. After you've already paid to get in. Well, that's not fair. Now, I'm not saying that the WWE shit the bed like that. You still got a great, great match, at least a feature match. And I think you got a really good match. I'll tell you, I was more impressed than I thought I would be with Isla Dawn and Alba Fire. I wasn't their biggest fan. But they put on a very, very solid match with Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey. Very solid match. And I don't care what anybody says. I know there's a lot of hate for Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey has gotten infinitely better as a professional wrestler. Infinitely better. Every time I see her, I say to myself, my God, I remember Ronda Rousey coming in here, and she was just the shit. She couldn't do three things without having other people at ringside or people whispering in her ear. It was just terrible. She was not ready at all, didn't get it. All she was a UFC fighter doing UFC stuff in a WWE ring and just not putting any pressure on the holds or whatever. Now I see Ronda Rousey and I'm like, no, she's a professional wrestler. She gets it. Her timing is better. You don't have to hold her hand through a match. She can actually lead you through a match now. She's gotten infinitely better. And I know she says some things that you're like, but you know, when CM Punk does it, oh, he's wonderful. He says these things off the cuff and he's wonderful. When Ronda Rousey does it, she's a bitch. I give Ronda all the credit in the world. I think she's done a fantastic job. You know, I was the one who said, I don't know if her heart's in professional wrestling. I'm still not sure her heart's in professional wrestling, but I'll tell you this. She's giving it more than I thought she would. I really thought she was going to be one of those people who said, look, I'm Ronda Rousey. My name is enough. I don't need to go learn to do a million different things. Just put me in the ring. I'll do a few judo flips and a submission hold. I'll mildly sell some other things, and that's about all I'm going to do. And that's not the truth. She's gotten infinitely better. So, you know, I think this tag team championship, Tom, could be good for the WWE.
I do as well, and I got to tell you, I don't like their gimmick because it looks like mean girls dressed up in Halloween costumes. But I love Isla Dawn and Alba Fire's work. They always put on really good matches, but they really held their own against Shayna and Ronda. What I will say about Ronda is I agree with you 100% that she's come full circle and was able to make that really smooth transition from UFC fighter to professional wrestler, because it's a way different than what she used to be. And she's very smooth. She's very fluent, and it's way more entertaining than when we first saw her, you know, come in. It was kind of lackluster, but now it's like, okay, it's Ronda Rousey. Let's see. And,
yeah, it took her a while. I think her first run in WWE wasn't all that it should be. But I think this one is really coming along pretty well, Mike.
I think so, too. And look, yeah, her first run wasn't good. But then she went away and she had her baby, and then she came back. Something clicked. Something clicked, and she got better. And you're right. The only thing I would have changed with that match is I wouldn't have had – because Alba Dawn and Alba Fire and Isla Dawn had been so dominant in NXT, I wouldn't have had them tap out. I would have had them pass out. Because it would have made them look as tough as they should be, right? Because, yeah, you want them to tap out to make Ron and them look tough, but these two women have been dominant. And Ronda and Shayna had only just won their titles.
And you could have even done something wacky, like, you know, the referee didn't see the tag and the wrong person's in the ring, so that when the girl passes out, you say, well, she passed out. She shouldn't even be in the ring. She tagged. She tagged and the referee didn't see it. So she passed out in the submission hold, but technically speaking, she wasn't the legal person. I mean, you could have done something more to protect them. You didn't protect them at all. You literally had them both tap out. And by the way, one of them's obviously illegally in the ring. Two of them, one from each team, is illegally in the ring. So why bother making those two tap out? That just makes – or that one tap out. That just makes them look worse. If you want to have one of them tap out, okay, the legal one. But why is the illegal one got to tap out? Right? But then it makes them both look – it's just, it was a bad decision. It's not a bad decision to unify the belts. It's not a bad decision to give it to Ronda and Shayna Baszler. I just think the ending's a bad decision. There were better ways to get to that would have protected them more and made you say, well, I'd like to see a rematch. See, because that's what I was thinking while this match was on is, wow, this is one of the better matches I've seen Ronda and Shayna in. I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch, and maybe we're going to see a three-way or something. So why couldn't you have had something where it was like, well, she's not even the legal person? You know how you protected Damian Priest with Bad Bunny by saying, oh, he injured his leg? Well, why couldn't you have done that? Why couldn't you have had one of the girls do a move, an offensive move, and say, oh, she hurt herself doing that offensive move, and now her arm is injured, and the other girl is, she keeps trying to tag the other girl for the hot tag. She keeps trying to tag her. But they just keep missing it. And finally she does tag her, and when she wants to come in like a house of fire, the referee says, I didn't see it. And they put her in that submission, and what can you do? She's already injured her arm. That way they have an excuse saying, I shouldn't have even been in the ring. I injured my arm. I made the legal tag, and the referee didn't see it. Next time will be different. You're like, I'd like to see that match. Now what's the difference? They both tapped out. So, yeah, I think that was dumb. It's a dumb move. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about CM Punk in Canada, where the reaction was a little bit different than it was in Chicago now, wasn't it? I don't care what anybody says. I understand he's got fans, and I'm glad that if you enjoy CM Punk, I'm glad you enjoy CM Punk. But here's the thing. If you're going to sit here and tell me in any way, shape, or form, in any universe, that this guy is good for AEW or even wrestling, I'd love to know what you're thinking. I'd love to know what you're thinking. I mean, we could literally say, okay, well, we're going to put Charles Manson on AEW, and people would watch it because they'd say, oh, my God, what are they going to use him for? So that's – to tell me, well, there's a little bit of a ratings boost, big deal. Big deal. Lizzo could come in there and get a ratings boost. Is she good for wrestling? So this is the problem. You get CM Punk in these environments where you have to protect him by giving him his own show. Then you have to protect him by making sure his debut is in Chicago where he's going to get cheered. And then he gets exposed because when you go everywhere else, he's being booed for the most part. And here's the thing. They're not booing him because they're supposed to boo him. And they're going to take full credit for that. They're going to say, well, it doesn't matter whether he's cheered or booed. They're not ignoring him, and that's the best thing, right? You know, as long as you're being booed or cheered, it doesn't matter. As long as the crowd doesn't ignore you, that's the old rule. Here's why that old rule does not apply. You're not supposed to be booing him. And the booing that they're doing is not, boo, we want to see somebody come and beat you. It's, boo, we don't want to see you at all. Boo, we're upset you got rehired. That's not the right booing. If they were just booing him because they want MJF to kick his ass or something, okay, well, then it's working. But when you're booing because you're literally saying, I don't like this guy and I don't necessarily want to see him, that's not heat. Not the right kind of heat anyway. Now, once again, he was on Dynamite, and from what I hear, a couple of people were very upset he was. They're saying the only reason he was is because it's in Chicago. If you got to protect this guy to the point where you have to give him his own show, make sure it's in his own hometown, what next? He gets to choose who gets to come in the audience? I mean, is that the next thing? Prove you're a CM Punk fan, you can't get into the show? I mean, at what point are you going to let this guy dictate every single thing? And then when he doesn't dictate every single thing, it doesn't go as planned at all. You're giving him $9 million and he's doing what for you? Did you break a million on Saturday? No, you didn't. You did well, but you didn't break a million. 850,000 or whatever it is. Let's see if you can maintain it. I doubt it. So what's he doing? How many guys did he bring in and say, oh, well, yeah, I'm bringing in guys because now that I'm here, people want to come, right? You can laugh at Jericho all you want. I know a lot of people say, oh, we don't like Jericho. Yeah, well, when Jericho signed with AEW, all of a sudden everybody else was like, wow, Jericho's in. I want to be in. I want to be in. I want to be in. CM Punk comes in, and there's people like, I want out. How is that the same thing? It's not. Start to sign guys like Jericho and Moxley and stuff. There were people who were like, oh, I'd like to be over there. CM Punk signs, and there's people like, I don't know, when's my contract up? That's not good. It's not good. So now we're seeing him exposed to a certain extent. And I think that I don't think this is going to work, Mike. I really don't. We'll see where this goes. Maybe he can somehow finagle his way back into the good graces of people, but I think this is a long shot.
I think it's a long shot as well. And, you know, to tell you the truth, he's another one. We know what his shortcomings are, and he showed them last night. And the fact of the matter is he's still not in shape. He's still what he is at this late age, you know. Whereas a lot of these guys who are close to that age keep themselves in tremendous shape, right? They look like they belong. He just doesn't, you know. And I'll say it before. Take a look at him at 40, at almost 50, and Sting at almost 65, 70. And tell me who looks like they belong in a wrestling ring.
Right. Well, you listen, it's day and night. Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, I think Derek asked me earlier on if I, you know, who's the most hated person, my most hated worker, is it CM Punk? And I said, I don't hate CM Punk. I don't know CM Punk. Maybe in real life he does a lot of charity work. He's a nice guy. I don't know. But I don't know. What I know is what he does in relation to professional wrestling. And I don't think he's good for the business. I think at one time he was, but not now. And especially not in a company like AEW, who's trying so hard to get over that hill to the next level, because I think he's isolating too many people. And I don't think his draw power is worth the problems that he creates. Once again, if tomorrow, you know, you put AJ Styles over there, there's going to be X amount of people who says, oh, man, I'd like to go work for them too, man. I could work with Styles. I could work with Jericho. I could work with Sting. I could work with these people. I'd be, you know, that'd be great. On the other hand, CM Punk, and people are like, well, you better give him his own show, and you better keep him away from me, and you better not book me in any matches, when even people in New Japan are saying I ain't wrestling him. And that's not even your federation. Don't book me to wrestle him because I'm not wrestling him. You got a problem. You got a problem. And instead of acknowledging that problem, see, this is the thing that I don't like about CM Punk. If I had that problem where my name and reputation was getting bad with workers, instead of calling them soft and weak, I would say, all right, what do I do to fix this? Obviously, I've really ruffled some feathers, and I don't need to ruffle feathers in the dressing room. So how do I fix this? Instead, he comes out on a live mic and basically says, if you like those guys, the only people that's softer and weaker than you are the guys you're rooting for. Oh, yeah, that's going to help. And by the way, softer and weaker than a guy who is still, after 2 years, mad about a Hangman Page promo that you didn't clear with him to begin with, that he didn't clear with you? That's the very definition of soft and weak. No, I'm still mad at Page because he said X, Y, and Z and didn't tell me he was going to say it. Well, and then you're calling other people soft and weak? He has no self-perception whatsoever. He'll call people hypocrites while being the biggest hypocrite. He'll call people crybabies while being the biggest crybaby. He has a zero self-perception. And then he'll do ridiculous things, like he'll see a sign that says support LGBTQ kids, and he'll hold it up. I'm a nice guy. He wouldn't spit on any of you if you're on fire. It's all about him. How do I make myself look good? How do I self-aggrandize myself? How do I make that extra $5? That's him. That's him. Now let's juxtapose him with a guy like Sheamus, who realizes, look, I'm a big star here, but Solo needs to look good too, because he's going into a big match, and I'll go out here and bust my ass for him, which he did, and make the crowd enjoy it. I don't see CM Punk busting any ass. I see CM Punk walking into a federation saying, don't expect me to be in top shape. Don't expect me to dye my beard. Don't expect me to look like I'm a wrestler. Just don't expect anything. I'm showing up, and that's good enough. I'll say some shit on the mic that'll disturb people. I'll make a few Instagram videos that'll get people talking. All I am is one big hype machine, but there's nothing else behind me. You might as well be Logan Paul with a little bit better mic skills, but maybe not even ring skills. That's basically what he is. Except he's that 24 hours a day. See, if you catch Logan Paul outside the wrestling ring, he's not going to say, ah, look, all the guys in the dressing room, to be honest with you, me and my brother could take out 95% of them, and Vince McMahon's an old idiot, and Triple H, you know, after his surgery and everything, should just retire. He looks like he's 100 years old, and this federation's being run like idiotic, and the writers suck. He would never say that. He'd never say that. Even if he felt it in his heart, he'd never say it. Because he's smart enough to know, well, that's not going to fly. CM Punk has no filter, and he sees no wrong in anything he does. So he'll say something that's absolutely crybaby-ish, and then when someone complains, he calls him a crybaby. Oh, you can't be so sensitive that when I said this about you, you got mad. But if you say something about me, Oh, well, then I'm going to fly off the handle, and I'm going to say it on talk shows outside of wrestling where you can't really respond to me. I'm not going to address it in a ring where you can have a response. I'm the only guest on this talk show. I'm going to talk shit about you. And then you get no retaliation at all, so I get the last word. That's a coward. I don't like that. So I don't hate CM Punk as a human being, but I don't think he's good for the business, and I don't think he's good for AEW at all. He would have been the last person in the world I would have signed if I was Tony Khan. You had a dressing room that seemed like it was happy-go-lucky. Yeah, you had a few problems with Sammy Guevara and Andrade, but at the end of the day, the dressing room wasn't too bad. Now it's divided. And that's what you get for your $9 million, a divided dressing room and fans that only want to see him if he's in Chicago. I don't think that's a great pickup there, Tom.
No, I don't either. And, you know, you have to get some kind of return on your investment. And, normally the Canadian fans are very passionate when wrestling comes to their country, very passionate. And to give CM Punk go-away heat, let's call spade a spade. He got what he deserved. So to be honest with you, I really don't hold the Canadian fans responsible for basically telling them go away, because they're there. They're booing him, but they're booing him because they really don't like him and don't want him to be there. Where I'll make a comparison, Marcus. Remember in WCW that Goldberg was the big cheese, and Goldberg could not be touched. He was 174-0, and he makes some comment that he didn't want to work with Jericho because Jericho was too small and he didn't sell right and all these things that he said. Well, fast forward a couple years later, who gets the hugest pop in Chicago on his debut? And when Goldberg comes back, he instantly starts crap with Jericho. Whose side did they take? Jericho kicked his ass in the locker room. He's a third of his size.
And here's the thing. CM Punk couldn't help but mock Hulk Hogan, too, when they're booing him, right? He had to mock Hulk Hogan. Let me say this. I do not condone what Hulk Hogan said. I don't condone the way Hulk Hogan presented himself sometimes in the locker room. Did he hold some careers back? Yeah, I think he did. Did he call a lot of his own shots and play politics in the back? Oh, absolutely he did. But at the end of the day, I'm telling you, and if you don't believe me, then I can't help you. Without Vince McMahon, who everybody's shitting on, and Hulk Hogan, who everybody's shitting on, there isn't any AEW. There isn't any Sami Zayn. There isn't any Stone Cold Steve Austin. There isn't any of those people. Because wrestling was the drizzling shit. You know who watched it? According to everyone, with an IQ above 40, slack-jawed yokels who thought it was real. Oh, the only people in the audience are people going, oh, up damn that guy, I'm a son of a bitch. And, haven't changed their underwear in 2 weeks and haven't taken a shower in a month. That's who they thought watched wrestling. When Vince McMahon came along with the idea of WrestleMania and he promoted Hulk Hogan as being this big all-American hero and the craze happened and the rock and wrestling connection and everything exploded, wrestling became what it is now. Wrestling does not get to where it is now without Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan. End of conversation. I don't care what you say. End of conversation. I seen it happen. Go back and take a look at some of the, when you had champions like Pedro Morales and Bruno and Backlund. Yeah, they were selling out Madison Square Garden. No question about it. They were also having shows in little 500-seat places and 600-seat places. There was no walk into Walmart and you see WWF on everything. There was no ice cream bars. There was no worldwide whatever. There was no celebrities flocking to see it. There was no, buzz about having celebrities in the front row and everyone buzzing about it. That was Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan. Together, the chemistry of creating an American hero in Hulk Hogan that captured, to his credit, he captured the imagination of a huge group of people. And Vince promoted him exactly the right way, whether people get their nose broke about it or not, and fed him a steady diet of interesting opponents who helped, obviously. But without that combination, we don't even get AEW, I don't think, let alone billion-dollar TV deals and things. You don't get that. You're on Channel 9 at midnight. That's what they used to be, Channel 9, midnight. Now you got Fox going to give them billions of dollars, right? You think that happened because of Sami Zayn? No, it happened because of Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon. That's it. Yeah, there was big crowd for other things. I know that NWA drew some big crowds and AWA drew some big crowds in their territories. But it wasn't a worldwide phenomenon. And people then began to accept it that were saying, I wouldn't watch wrestling because I don't want to be put in the same category as wrestling fans who are dumb and think it's real. All of a sudden, it was okay to enjoy it. We're not shoving it down your throat that it's real. That's Vince McMahon who did that. That's Vince McMahon who made it an entertainment spectacle that everyone could equally enjoy. So you can shit on them all you want. But without them, Mike, I don't think we're anywhere near where we are with wrestling today.
No, yeah, you're right. Without Vince McMahon, we wouldn't have had the NWO. Because Vince McMahon gave us Hulk Hogan, and without Hulk Hogan, the NWO might have been big, but it wouldn't have been the phenomenon it was with Hogan. Because that's how good Hogan is. You may, like you say, you may not like he plays politics. You may not like how he comported himself. There was a story that was told about his early career, about him in training where somebody they didn't like him and they because he wouldn't sell or whatever, and then somebody ended up breaking his leg and he had to come back 6 or 8 months later to continue his training or whatever. But those are stories, you know. They're good stories. There's, you know, whatever. But without Hogan, we wouldn't have had the NWO the way without McMahon, we wouldn't have had Hogan to give us the NWO, you know. And that's
no, absolutely
that's how,
right. You can not like the person, but you can't take away what they've done, and it's just that simple. Anyway, let me get to this Forbidden Door thing. I'm going to give you the rundown here. Here's the full list of matches. We have the AWA World Heavyweight Championship, which is MJF versus Hiroshi Takahashi. I love MJF. I think he's a great heel. Here's the problem with MJF. He's defended the belt like twice in almost a year. If you're going to have a champion, you really, honestly, you need to have him on TV all the time. And, yeah, I know people are going to say Roman Reigns, but he's always on TV, though. And he defended almost every pay-per-view. AEW don't have that many pay-per-views, so you're going to have MJF defend the belt a little more often. Seth Rollins has defended his belt more times since he won it, which is just not that long ago, than MJF has this whole year. Anyway, obviously that belt's not changing hands. IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Sonata versus Jungle Boy Jack Perry. Sonata, whether it's a gimmick or not, I don't know, has basically said, how does a guy like this get a shot? He's a no-name. That's not good. It's really not good. Even if it's a work, that's not a really good work, actually. See, because here's the deal. Never, ever, ever make it look like your opponent sucks. Because if you make it look like your opponent sucks, then who did you beat? You beat some guy who sucked? Okay, well. Good for you. See, if you make your opponent look tough and you beat him, I beat somebody, right? If you make your opponent look like he sucks, well, then you didn't accomplish much, right? AEW Women's World Championship, we got Toni Storm versus Willow Nightingale. Let's see how that works out. IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship, Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay probably will be the match of the night. AEW International Championship, Orange Cassidy versus Zack Sabre Jr. versus Kisori Sabata versus Daniel Garcia. Okay. Then we got that Men's Owen Hart Cup tournament, and that's where CM Punk is going to take on Satoshi Kojima. We'll see what the fans think about that one. Women's Owens Hart Cup tournament is Athena versus Billy Starks. We got Bryan Danielson versus Kazuchika Okada. Blackpool Combat Club with Kensuke Takahashi and Soto against the Elite and Eddie Kingston and Tomohiro Ishii. And we got Chris Jericho, Minoru Suzuki, Sammy Guevara and Sting versus Darby Allin. Somebody, I think, to be announced, Adam Cole and Tom Lawler. It sounds like a good card. I like when they do these Forbidden Door things because it's interesting. Here's what I think is funny. CM Punk's pretty low on that list. Now, you would think that for a guy who's making $9 million, if you thought so highly of him, that guy would be your main event. Right? Titles be damned. It's the guy who draws. I don't think they think he's that big of a deal. Now, I've heard some rumors. I don't know if this is true, so I'm just going to put this out there. I heard some rumors that Tony Khan and CM Punk came to this agreement so that they mutually could drop their lawsuits because there were lawsuits pending, big ones. And if Tony Khan felt he was going to have to hand over a ton of money to CM Punk anyway, might as well make him work for it. And if CM Punk thought he was going to have to shell out some bucks, he may as well, bow the knee and say, I'll come back and work, and you drop your lawsuit. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've been hearing. And it is a possibility because that's the only reason I can think of offhand, Tom, where Tony Khan would think this is the best thing overall for everyone.
Yeah, and in retrospect, it's not, because what kind of return is he getting? Honestly, I mean, it's kind of backfiring. If that's really the case, and it seems to be applicable, that's what I would think. But it's kind of backfiring, because what kind of return is he getting by investing $9 million in a guy who's, you know, drawing 800,000? And only popular in his hometown. So, and for CM Punk to come out and mock people who basically paved the way for him to even be in professional wrestling is he's become a legend in his own mind, much like the Ultimate Warrior. The difference is that Ultimate Warrior captured the imaginations of the fans. CM Punk doesn't capture flies on crap.
See, my problem is this. My problem is if the only way you can get ahead is by making other people look bad, then I don't know how much talent you have. Have you ever seen AJ Styles make somebody look bad? Have you ever seen AJ Styles say, this guy sucks? Yeah, I wouldn't wrestle this guy. This guy's garbage. I've never seen it. Have you ever, I've not seen it. He always makes whoever's in the ring with, even James Ellsworth, for God's sake, he made look good. And did it willingly. And that's somebody who you can say, all right, well, they're given to the business. When AJ Styles needs to lose a match to somebody like Karrion Kross, no problem. He's a guy that you put some faith in, and now it's not working out too good for him, and he needs a big victory. I guess I'll be the guy. Just like Sheamus. Now Solo Sikoa, probably after this match, is basically going to go on his own solo run. No pun intended. So he needs a big victory. Sheamus is like, okay, I'll be the guy. You think CM Punk's ever going to be that guy? You think if CM Punk right now was in the WWE, and they said, you got to go out there and basically Solo's going to beat you up so bad that the Usos have to basically save you. What do you think CM Punk's going to say? if CM Punk's floating around in the WWE locker room and they say, hey, listen, we know you're a multi-time champion, much like AJ Styles, we need you out there and drop the Karrion Kross, what do you think he's going to say? That's my problem with him, Todd, is that I don't think he gives back to the business at all. Now we're having trouble with the phones. Hopefully people can still hear me. Let me refresh the page, see what happens. All right, hopefully we're still on. Mike, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. All right, go right ahead.
Okay, so I'll give you a good example we're talking about with CM Punk. Just from his own show, all right? They want to make Willow Nightingale look like she belonged in a championship match. So what they do last night, they went to Nyla Rose and said, Nyla, who, by the way, we know what she is, but Nyla, you are to go out there and make her look like what she is, a very powerful, athletic woman, right? And Nyla did it. She took one for the team, okay? She made, even though she could have done her usual bit, she made Nyla Rose look at least as powerful as she did. I mean, if you watch that match last night, Nyla Rose basically just about handed, not Nyla Rose, Willow Nightingale just about handed Nyla Rose her ass because Nyla Rose was selling Willow Nightingale because I guess she was probably told to, but she was selling it as that is the right thing to do, right? You think CM Punk's going to do that with somebody like that, for some up-and-comer like that?
No, they're not going to. And I know there's going to be people that say, well, Brock Lesnar's not going to do it either. Yes, you're correct. Lesnar's not going to do that. But CM Punk is not Brock Lesnar. That's the thing you got to remember. I don't have the expectation that Brock Lesnar at this stage of his career is going to say, I'm just going to come and make young guys look good. He's going to pick his spots. How many times has, he been beaten? Got beat by Cody Rhodes. Got beat by Roman Reigns. Seth Rollins beat him multiple times. So he does lose matches. CM Punk, the problem is this. It's very, very easy to say I love wrestling if you say I get to pick everything I do. I get to pick who I work with. I get to pick what I say. I get to pick what I wear. I get to pick when I show up. Okay, well, who has a job like that? Let me tell you a little story because I found this pretty funny, and this goes to show you that no one's ever said CM Punk is not safe to work with. Apparently, he is very safe to work with. But just to show you, like, wrestler's mentality, I was listening to Sergeant Slaughter on an interview. He's talking about came back to the WWE after the G.I. Joe thing. He thought Vince McMahon was going to make him a big American hero, bigger than Hogan. And McMahon said, no, we're making you the bad guy. We want to make you this Iraqi sympathizer and everything. And Slaughter said, okay, that's fine. Well, before they could get a chance to do that, apparently Randy Savage had his wrist broke or his forearm broke by the Ultimate Warrior accidentally. And while that was healing, they needed somebody to fill in against the Ultimate Warrior. So Slaughter was the guy. So they told him, you got to fill in every night on the road for Randy Savage. He said the Warrior was so stiff that it was basically just like being punched. And he said after like the second night, he motioned the Warrior to like come into the dressing room or near an area of the dressing room and said, the Warrior said, is everything okay? And, shook his hand and said, how did it go? And he said, no, everything is not okay. You're really throwing heavy shots out there. And here's the deal. You've either got to ease up or I got to start giving you some receipts. And the thing is, if you don't ease up, you're not going to have an opponent, because I'm not going to be able to do this night after night if you're laying crap in like this. So you're going to have to ease up. And according to Slaughter, the Warrior said, okay, no problem. And then Slaughter said, we proceeded to do another 8 or 10 shows where he did absolutely nothing different. And so he said, when you watch our matches, you're seeing us. He said, I just started retaliating, and we were basically really brawling. We knew it was going to win and everything, but those shots were basically real because I wasn't going to take it anymore. And when Slaughter finally won the championship, he said, I want you to watch this, because when Randy Savage returned and he hit him with the scepter, he knocked him out for real. He said that was actually Randy Savage's receipt for having his bone broken by the Ultimate Warrior, as he just cracked him in the head. He said he was literally, he said, watch me drag him away from the rope, and then I decided, well, I'm not going to let him get all the heat, and I dropped an elbow on him, and he was unconscious for real. So see, this is the way wrestlers handle things, or used to handle things. CM Punk is now coming into the AEW basically saying, don't say anything negative about me that I don't already approve. Don't you dare work any kind of rough with me. Don't you dare say an ill word about me. Don't you dare whisper in the dressing room about me. Because then that doesn't meet my standards, and I'll take my ball and go home. So I'm suggesting to you that if CM Punk was around back then, somebody would have broke his friggin' arm. And that's what The Undertaker meant when he said the locker room's grown soft. And he said there used to be guys in here with guns and everything else. He didn't mean he wanted to return to the days when people had guns. He meant he wanted to return to the days when you weren't a crybaby and you just said, I'll take care of this myself if I have to. We're not going to whine every 2 seconds if something happens. We're not going to run to the boss and say, boo-hoo-hoo, can you fix this for me? Would probably be beneficial. I just think CM Punk wants everything handed to him. He wants to be protected at all times. And I don't think this is great for Tony Khan. And Tony Khan has done some good stuff. You know, I was very skeptical when Tony Khan signed Sting, because I really thought what you were going to do with Sting is what you do with the Big Show. He'll, once in a blue moon, you'll see him, and then you just don't see him. And every once in a while, they remind you, Sting is here. No, you've actually used him in a very good, positive way. And those are the type of guys you need. Now, I've heard bad things about Sting as far as fans are concerned, but I've not heard anything bad in the locker room. And Sting seems to be someone who is willing to stick around the business and give it what he's got. And when you see the juxtaposition of a guy like Sting with the juxtaposition of a guy like Punk, it's annoying. It's just annoying. I mean, Sting could have come in there. I would argue that he's a much bigger star. And it's just annoying that, you know, he didn't come in here and say, I want the championship right away, and I want this, and I want that, and I want a separate dressing room, and I don't want to work with this one, and I want my own show. And he didn't do that. He's out there busting his ass. So this is what I mean when I say there are different types of wrestlers, Mike, and the ones that you really want are the ones like that, and they all seem to be more old school.
Right, and that's the thing. And much like Sheamus with the WWE, when Sting actually does decide to hang him up for good, AEW is going to miss him, and miss him big. I mean, and so is Darby Allin. I mean, I like Darby Allin. I like him a lot. I think he has a big future. I think he's one of these guys that could go to the WWE and be something big or bigger. But they made, like I said before, they made the right decision in putting Sting and Darby Allin together, because obviously Darby Allin's learned a lot from Sting, and that's the way it should be.
That's exactly the way it should be. Now, Sting is giving back to the business. He doesn't necessarily have to give back to the business by losing every match he's in or whatever, but he's giving back to the business by having people learn from what he's doing, benefiting by like, for instance, we're going to see Sting and Jericho in the ring together. And, I mean, that's going to be – that's the first time, which is amazing to me that that's the first time. That'll be very interesting. Very interesting. And you can give me a guy like Jericho a million times over. I know the people say he's got an ego. I'm sure he does. And I know that there's going to be people that say, well, he don't want to lose to this person or that person. But Jericho has put plenty of people over. And I think Jericho doesn't really have a problem putting the people over. I think what Jericho has is he has a very specific sense of what wrestling should be. And when it starts to vary from that and you start to promote people that he thinks, well, you're promoting the wrong people and stuff. And I know that's not necessarily his business, but Jericho is very vocal about that. I would argue that Jericho helped Sammy Guevara's career a zillion times as well as MJF. As well as MJF. Name me who CM Punk has helped. And then when he's on an interview, MJF goes on an interview and trashes everybody all the time because he's in character. CM Punk goes supposedly in character, but then says things that are breaking kayfabe. Like, well, when me and Moxley were trying to work out our match, he said, well, I want to make it like a Rocky movie. And I said, well, that's dumb. I've never seen a Rocky movie. I don't know what you're talking about. This ain't Rocky. This is wrestling. Why do you have to do that? Why do you have to make fun of Moxley's ideas for a match? Because that's not heat. That's you pulling the curtain back. Okay? That's you pulling the curtain back. But then if somebody says that about you, when Paige brought up some of your past shit, you were like, oh, how dare you, right? So this is a problem I have. I think that wrestling in general needs to return to a little bit of an older school mentality because the new school ideas are not proving to be successful. You can argue all you want, well, 800,000 is great. There was a time when the WWE was doing 3.5 million. Viewers, more sometimes. So how is it great when wrestling in general has lost probably a third of its audience? Who did you lose? And why did you lose them? I mean, think of it this way. If you're selling out, if you're a band and you're selling out arenas and ball stadiums 10 years ago, and now you're saying, well, we just sold out 40 shows in a row, but there's only 1,800 seats in the place. We're doing great. No, you're not doing great. You're doing way worse than you used to, and something's wrong. You've lost a lot of your fans. Wrestling in general, WWE right along with them, has lost a lot of their fans. And the partial reason behind it is because we don't have those larger-than-life characters anymore. We don't have the Stone Cold Steve Austins. We don't have the Rocks anymore. And when we try to present a character like that, new fans say, well, they don't do 35-minute Iron Man matches with 450 flips, so I don't want to see them. Well, I don't know then. What do you want wrestling to be? Because it's not going to, you're not going to get over that hump and go back to what it used to be unless you present something super interesting. And what I'm finding is the WWE has a lot of older fans who are hanging on from the days when they remember the Attitude Era and stuff like that. The young crowd is not getting into wrestling like it used to be because, let's face it, a 10-year-old or 11 or 12-year-old does not want to see two guys do a 25-minute match on the mat. Or do a few flips. They want to see some larger-than-life character that's like, ooh, he's scary, or ooh, he's mean, or ooh, I like him, right? You got to take them into consideration, too, because today's 12-year-olds or tomorrow's 25-year-olds who might continue to watch wrestling. If you don't have the young fan base, you know, I watched wrestling when I was waddling in diapers. I was watching wrestling. And I stuck with it. If I didn't get into it until I was, you know, 20, I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't like it as much. That's the problem, Mike. This we need, I think wrestling needs to understand that you've got to build your audience from the younger generation up, not just the hanger-ons.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, I've made the comparison with early TNA, right, where they were sitting there giving away tickets. They were at Universal Studios, whatever, and they were giving away tickets. But who were they giving away the tickets to, right? They were selling out, but who were they giving away the tickets to? People that probably didn't care much for, I'm getting a free ticket to this event. It's an event.
Right.
It's not a wrestling card. It's an event, right?
Yep.
And that's what it was. And you're right about back then, you know, back in the Attitude Era when they were getting $3.5 million. But again, you go back to the Monday Night Wars, they may have been getting $3.5 million, but WCW was getting damn near $4 million, you know, at the time. You know, so that goes back to the competition thing as well, you know. When you have competition, competition makes you better. And right now, AEW is nowhere near being the competition for WWE. They don't fear them like at the time they feared.
No, you're right. You're right. And there's just less people interested in watching wrestling, and there's more wrestling on than ever before, so that's a problem. More product, less interest in the product. And that becomes a problem. So, listen, can wrestling get back to its heyday here? Well, I don't know. I don't know. When I was 11, everybody I knew watched wrestling. Almost. You couldn't go to school without them talking about it, right? Now, I don't hear that so much. When I see younger kids, you know, they know some wrestlers, but they don't watch it all the time, or they're not really 100% sure of who's who or what's what. And I'll tell you, I had a very interesting conversation with some people who work in retail stores. I know a guy who works in Walmart. I know a guy who works in Target. And I asked them, I want you to keep an eye on who's buying AEW and WWE figures and things like that. And you know what they all said? Adults. Very, very seldom do we see a parent with a kid and the kid saying, I want that figure. No, it's adults coming in and snatching seven of them for their collection or to sell them on eBay or to hoard them or whatever they're going to do. So it used to be that the kids were buying all the products because they loved the actual show. Now kids are not buying those products. For the most part, Tom, they're being sold to adults, so that goes to show you.
Yeah, and, you know, wrestling is not as appealing to the, you know, the younger crowd these days. I remember a time when we were, you know, when I was, you know, watching wrestling every single week, and there came a time where I had to work when Monday Night Raw was on, and if I didn't catch the first few minutes of Monday Night Raw, I was kind of mad because they didn't do recaps every 5 seconds. They just moved on.
Right.
And,
you know,
you had to set your VCR, and and God help you if your VCR malfunctioned and didn't tape anything. You had to find out the recap from your friends who did watch it. And if you were lucky enough to watch it, you got a two-hour entertaining show that was talked about for the next week. It's not like that anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I missed it, but I'll catch it on the replay, or I'll DVR it and fast forward through the boring parts. It's not as impactful anymore to even to the crowd that is still hanging on. The younger crowd is just like, nah, I like the flippity floppity stuff. And
that's because the kids used to have heroes, and the adults used to have people they live vicariously through. In other words, the kids' heroes might have been a John Cena, who was always, you know, Mr. Nice Guy, right? Now, the more adult audience, they had Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, was kicking the hell out of his boss every week, just like 90% of the people wanted to kick the hell out of their boss every week. You had something for everybody. Now, who's the kids' hero? If you're 12, who's your hero in WWE? Who's your hero? I guess you could say Cody Rhodes is trying to fit into that, but until he came through, who's supposed to be your hero? I don't see one. I don't see one. That's a problem. If you're an adult, who are you living vicariously through? I don't see one. That's a problem. I still have people writing to me saying, I collect Stone Cold Steve Austin stuff or Rock stuff or Undertaker stuff. I never have anybody writing to me saying I'm collecting Kevin Owens stuff. I'm collecting Drew McIntyre stuff. I don't hear anybody doing that. That's a problem. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about Bray Wyatt because he issued a statement. And, you know, listen, I've said on the show before, I'll say it again. I'm a huge Bray Wyatt fan. I think he's extremely creative. I think he's a fun character. I always think it's something different, unique. Even if I don't like it, it's still unique. But he's shit in the bed with this comment. I'm sorry. He's basically saying, well, Uncle Howdy, everything that I've portrayed in my life has to do with my real life. And if you had the real backstory to Uncle Howdy and the differences, it's not split personalities. It's actually chapters of my life. And Uncle Howdy represents this. And there's much more to the story than you know. And if you knew the entire story, you would be, look, I don't want to hear any more of it. Present the fucking thing then. Do what you got to do. But the way you were getting Uncle Howdy over, ain't nobody going to be interested in this. He said, oh, it's more than a man in a mask. It represents something else. Well, please tell me what it represents, because I don't want to wait 17 years to get to it. We have a limited time here. Yes, long-term storytelling is great, but when the story's going nowhere, people are going to stop paying attention to it. You have a limited time frame in wrestling, okay? You got, like, they give you 6 minutes a week to do what you're going to do. You can't say, well, it's going to take probably until 2028. But what we don't have, it's not going to work, okay? You got to get this over. Step by step is fine. Don't tell it too quick, but Jesus, tell it. So I don't want to hear this. If you've got this great, deep, dark idea, present it, please. Because you going off on hiatuses for 6 months at a time is not helping. Wrestling could use that sort of entertainment, Mike, back. And I hope that when Bray Wyatt comes back, he understands that, because patience is one thing. But we're not waiting 12 years to find out who Uncle Howdy is.
That's right. And that's the thing. As far as selling things, collecting things and all that stuff, the last group or whatever that really did that type of stuff was, of course, the New Day. Think about it. How many of those goddamn unicorn horns did they sell? The boxes of bootios, you know? I mean,
yes.
There's probably people that still have those unicorn horns. There's probably people that still have at least the box, maybe not the T-shirt that came in the box, but the box itself, right?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. I mean, at one point, they were teasing ice cream bars at one point.
Yes.
And I would have loved to have seen it, but they were teasing it. And I guarantee you they could have sold the hell out of those things if they'd went through with it.
Well, I think you make a good point. I think the New Day were probably the last heroes to young kids. I would watch the New Day come out, and they would dump the cereal on the kids' heads or the pancakes or whatever, and the kids were waiting for it, and they had unicorn horns on, and they had their New Day T-shirts. And yeah, I think you're right. I think the New Day, for a little while, became the hero of the younger kids, and then they sort of went with a little more adult slant to some of the things they were doing, and I think maybe they lost a little bit of that. But they gained a little bit of a new audience. That's why I'm not against when you have certain characters that are clearly meant for a younger audience. You got to have some. You got to have some. And you got to have some that are clearly meant for a more adult audience if you want to be all-inclusive. during the Attitude Era, they were basically saying none of this is for kids. Kids want to watch it, fine, but that's not our target audience. But today, that's not the case. Today, you're saying we want it to be all-inclusive. So to be all-inclusive, you have to have some people who the kids identify with, some people that the adults, and I don't see a lot of them. I just don't. That is a major problem. Cody Rhodes is trying to fill that to a certain extent, I think, Todd, but I don't know if he's the guy to do it.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this whole thing with the audience back then, with the Attitude Era, it was mostly 18 to 40-year-olds. Now you got, like, 8-year-olds to 13-year-old audience now.
Yeah, and I will say something about Cody Rhodes, because somebody asked me about this, and they said, oh, you know, he comes down there and literally signs a couple autographs for kids, and he's, like, pandering, desperately trying to get people to cheer for him. That's not true. That's really not true. That actually is Cody Rhodes. I've seen him do it. That's actually Cody Rhodes. He cares about the fans. I've always said that. He's not my favorite wrestler. And I do think there's a lot of stuff about Cody Rhodes, even in the WWE right now, that I don't care for. But the actual guy does care about the fans. I've watched him talk to fans in depth about the things that they like and the things they don't like, and not just be flippant about it and be like, yeah, okay, you like that, that's cool. No, he's listening. And actually saying, that's interesting, so you don't like that, why don't you like that? And he asks questions back. He is genuinely trying to give the fans what they want. I know that beyond a shadow of a doubt. And I like Cody Rhodes as a person. His gimmick in the WWE here is wearing thin on me, but I like him as a person. So when he's down there doing that, he doesn't have to do that. Vince McMahon did not tell him to do that, nor did anybody else tell him, go down there and try to pander to the fans by signing autographs and giving them a belt. No, that's definitely probably Cody's idea. So I'm going to give him credit for that, Tom.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Cody Rhodes, say what you want about Cody Rhodes, but here's a perfect example. This man had a – he built AEW. That was his baby. And he pretty much destroyed WWE and – ranked on him by destroying the Triple H throne. And when CM Punk came in, he was like, yeah, no, I'm good. And went back to the WWE.
That's true. You know, he saw the writing on the wall. Mike, I mean, with a little bit of fine tuning, maybe Cody could be the guy that is the hero of the younger kids. I don't know.
Right. Here's the other thing about this hero to the younger kids. What was Bayley's thing when she first came up?
Yes, I know. They ruined it.
You know, and that's the thing. We all said she could have been the female John Cena.
Yep.
You know,
they destroyed it.
They tend to do that. I mean, she had the Bayley buddy, the waving Bayley buddies, the waving things, sticks in the crowd, I'm a hugger, all that stuff. I'm just a fan who's trying her best to be a wrestler and all that stuff. You know, she was a perfect.
There's no doubt about that they spoiled that, and that could have been the hero, at least to the younger generation of girls. That would have been interesting, but WWE in their infinite wisdom did not do that. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening. We will be back here on Tuesday.